Welcome back to Upstate's HealthLink on air. Linda Cohen along with you. Millions of Americans suffer a concussion each year, and as many as 300,000 of them are the result of sports-related injuries. They can lead to months of troublesome symptoms or long-term brain damage and even death. What makes matters worse is that the symptoms of concussion are hard to diagnose and they often go unrecognized. And in the highly competitive world of today's sports culture and the pressure to get back in the game, many concussions do not get the proper treatment or attention they require. But New York State has just passed a new law to prevent these dangerous consequences. And here with us this morning is psychologist Dr. Brian Rieger, the director of Upstate's Concussion Management Program and Upstate Sports Concussion Center, to tell us all about it. Welcome, Dr. Rieger. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, for the sake of our listeners, help us start out by defining concussion. How is this different or the same as like what we call traumatic brain injury?
Well, a concussion is a traumatic brain injury. We call it a mild traumatic brain injury. Mild because the consequences are usually minimal if it's handled properly. In some cases, however, symptoms can go on for months, as you mentioned, or longer. So mild really refers to the fact that it's usually not life-threatening, but for those people going on to have a prolonged recovery, I'm sure they would disagree that it's a mild injury. But we do call it a traumatic brain injury.
So it is does fit within that category.
Absolutely.
And clearly, if you had multiple concussions, they do lead to some of the same consequences as we've been hearing about with traumatic brain injury.
Well, that's really the concern these days is, you know, we want to make sure we manage each concussion properly, because if you have another injury before you're fully recovered from a first one and you start stacking them up, we know that that can have very significant consequences. Likewise, even in people who recover fully from a concussion, there is certainly research to suggest that the effects of concussions can accumulate over time in some cases.
So they can be cumulative.
Yes.
So why is it so hard to diagnose, and why is it often missed?
It's called an invisible injury because, first of all, we have no objective medical test to formally diagnose a concussion. So if your son or daughter or a friend has a concussion and goes to the emergency department or urgent care, if they order a CT scan, for example, they're not doing that to diagnose the concussion. They're doing that to make sure it's not a more severe injury with bleeding or swelling. But in almost all cases of concussion, a CT scan or an MRI of the brain will look normal.
Wow.
The structure of the brain is not affected in a way that we can see on our conventional imaging techniques. However, we know that a concussion disrupts the brain's functioning. And so what we look for is evidence that the brain's not working properly. Memory problems, confusion, slurred speech, blurred vision, incoordination, those kinds of problems.
So it's not like you necessarily would have had to black out, which was kind of a myth. People think, well, you had to have blacked out in order to have a concussion.
Yes, hopefully most people realize nowadays that you do not have to lose consciousness. And in sports, for example, only about 10% of athletes actually lose consciousness. So if that's your definition of a concussion, you're missing 90% of them.
So we've got a lot of kids playing high school football. We've got, you know, and not limited to football-age children. What's generally the incidence how serious is this situation in terms of these kinds of concussions?
Well, that's a good question. The official estimates of the Center for Disease Control might say, for example, in football, that 10% of football players each season suffer a concussion. But there have been other studies conducted kind of anonymously of players and asking them during the season, at any point did you have these sorts of symptoms that might be suggestive of a concussion? And the rates of concussion are much higher when people look at it that way. So I think there's still a question as to what the incidence of concussion really is. Sometimes a concussion can be a very short-lived event. What people might say is getting their bell rung or getting dinged. And still a lot of people don't even think that that's a concussion when in fact we're starting to believe that even those very minor events can be suggestive that the brain has been injured in a way that requires our attention.
And like you alluded to earlier, if those go undiagnosed and ignored, and you have multiple experiences of that, which we've seen historically in football players, soccer players, what have you. There are a lot of long-term consequences to that, right?
That's probably the most interesting area of research that's going on right now, driven by people interested in the effects not only of repeated concussions over a career, but repeated blows to the head, such as you might experience in football or hockey, even if you don't have a lot of diagnosed concussions. And there's concern now that in some cases, that can lead to a condition that's been described as chronic traumatic encephalopathy. It used to be called boxer's dementia, but because they only found it in boxers, but that's because they were only looking in boxers. Mm-hmm. Now they've looked in football players and hockey players and others, and they're finding the same condition.
Even things like depression, though, or, I mean, I think of something like Muhammad Ali having Parkinson's. Obviously, to me, has some relationship to that kind of multiple, you know, brain injuries. Is that correct?
Well, in an individual case, it's still hard to know because these things often can't be diagnosed until autopsy. But you mentioned depression, for example. So we know from some studies that, for example, the risk of dementia and depression is higher amongst retired football players than the general population. So certainly, and neuropsychiatric symptoms like depression or, you know, even to the point of suicide. And there have been several high-profile athletes recently who've killed themselves, and when the brains have been autopsied, they found evidence of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So, you know, the brains look like an 80-year-old and the person's 40 or 50 or such.
So what kind of treatment is available these days for concussion? I mean, what is generally recommended if it is truly recognized and diagnosed?
I would say that the most important thing for concussion management is education, because you just said if it's properly recognized, and that's really the most important thing. Concussion management is actually not that difficult as long as we know a person's had a concussion and we're willing to believe that we need to take it seriously.
So what do they do? What is recommended?
So the first thing is we want to immediately remove someone from risk of re-injury. So if you're playing a contact sport, that would be important to immediately get them out of play or practice. We've also learned that exertion, physical and mental, after an injury can prolong recovery or aggravate symptoms. So we actually recommend both cognitive rest, such as limiting school activities, and physical rest. And again, for most people, that's really all they need. In some cases, however, symptoms will last beyond the typical week or two, and in those cases, we do recommend that people are referred to a specialized concussion program, and they may need medications, they may need accommodations in school, physical therapy for balance or dizziness problems. So it can be very complicated, but in most cases, the important thing is making sure everyone knows how to recognize a concussion, knows that we need to treat it seriously, and knows that we really need to help that person kind of limit their activity, especially early on.
Now, your special program here, the Upstate Concussion Program, is multidisciplinary. And tell us just a little bit about what you do with regard to education and possibly even prevention.
Well, our program has both a clinical, a research, and an education component. And community education like this is very important, again, so that people can help to recognize concussion. From a team treatment perspective, if a person has prolonged symptoms, they can affect physical, mental, and emotional functioning. So it really takes a team to understand and treat those symptoms. And I think we're fortunate here to have a team. You know, we've been doing this for over 10 years now and have learned a lot from the people we've treated. And just going through this can be extremely difficult. For kids in school who are not used to struggling in school, and all of a sudden they can't play their sport, they're not getting their grades, they look fine so people don't believe they're hurt, they can become very anxious and depressed on top of the injury itself. So the sooner we get in and help everybody understand what's going on, the better.
Are there more efforts towards prevention too? For example, better helmets, things that are trying to prevent this kind of thing?
There's a lot of work that's being done in that area, but most people involved in concussion, there's a recognition that a helmet may reduce the risk, but because the brain is floating inside the skull and can rotate or be thrown around, that really, you know, we probably are never going to be able to completely prevent concussion. And in most cases, again, I want to emphasize that it's a pretty short-lived event. So, you know, my daughters play sports, so I'm pro sports. I think the most important thing is, if it does happen, let's make sure we recognize it and treat it properly.
And allow it to heal sufficiently.
That's the most important thing.
Right. So there's a new program that you told us about, actually, before this interview, called the REAP Project. Tell us what that is, and it's a community education program?
It's a program that was started in Colorado by a psychologist who was interested in improving the collaboration between school districts, medical providers, and parents when a child goes back to school after concussion. The new law in New York State authorizes schools to form a concussion team, and the REAP program also encourages that there's a school-based team, there's a medical team, and then there's the athlete or child and their family.
So that REAP stands for Reduce, Educate, Accommodate, and Pace?
Yes.
Okay.
And
so reduce injury, educate the population, right. Accommodate to the injury, and pace may be a return.
Pace is very important in the sense of avoiding overexertion.
Mm-hmm.
So physical and mental pacing is very important. And one of our main recommendations for children who have protracted recovery from concussion and go back to school is that the school reduce the demands on the child. If they don't, we're going to have a hard time getting that child well. We need the school's help, and we want the child to get through their school year. We don't want them to fail because of their concussion. So we have to work together, and the REAP program tries to structure the communication between the school, the family, the medical providers. And the New York State law, again, authorizes districts to develop a team within the school. So not just on the sports side, you don't just want the athletic trainer involved, you want the school nurse involved, and you want teachers or educators involved who are knowledgeable about what the academic effects of concussion might be and how to help the student and the family deal with those things.
So as far as you're concerned, this law is going to be effective in protecting kids. Are there any problems with the law? I mean,
I think the spirit of the law is excellent. It emphasizes education for everyone involved in school sports. I wish that we had a similar law for youth sports, because at this time there's still no education requirement or even first aid requirement for many youth.
When you make that distinction, help us understand that.
Youth sports being non-school-based sports, so club sports, your club soccer,
right.
Club lacrosse, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it really focuses on school sports. It emphasizes education. I wish that the guidelines that the State Education Department put out, I wish they were more clear about their expectations in terms of education and requiring a bit more, but we'll see how it works out. So I think the spirit of it is education, immediately remove people from play, make sure they get proper medical clearance before they go back. And I agree with all of those things.
Well, it sounds like we're at least on the right track, and that New York State has taken some proactive
Absolutely.
Measures, so that's a positive thing. And we'll have links on our website to information about the REAP program and your concussion management program. And once again, what you're doing is so important, because the brains of our kids are our future. So we want to make sure we protect those little heads, and yet we want them to engage in sports for all the right reasons. Well, thanks so much. My guest has been Dr. Brian Rieger, director of Upstate's Concussion Management Program and Upstate Sports Concussion Center. We need to take a short break, but we'll be right back with more HealthLink on Air. Please stay with us.